Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Although academia and the study of reality are often completely at odds with one another nowadays, impressive work is being done in the field of afterlife-related research by people with serious credentials. We have to remember there are scientists working in this field. And when the history of this period of human awakening is written, and believe me, it is going to be written, the names of people like Victor and Wendy Zammit and my guest last week, Dr. Bruce Lipton, will be highlighted. And the wonderful names of the people we're going to be talking to today. I'm so excited about this. Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and our wonderful guests are two more of the brightest academic lights in this field, the incomparable Dr. Gary Schwartz of the University of Arizona at Tucson, and his partner in work and in life, Rhonda Schwartz. Now, Gary is the foremost trained scientist who is now studying the interface between those who are living here and those we used to think were dead. And his 2003 book, The Afterlife Experiments, is one of my all-time favorites. If you haven't read it, give yourself that treat. Gary and Rhonda were our guests separately just a few weeks ago, and they're back now to share with us some of the secrets of what's going on in their laboratory. Welcome, Gary. Welcome, Rhonda. I'm so glad you're with us.
Thrilled to be here.
Hi, Roberta.
Hi. So let's just say really briefly, if you can, what is it that you're studying? What's the goal? Just to orient people, and then I'd like to have you tell us about the process, because many people are not aware that you can scientifically study these matters.
Well, I'll begin, because Rhonda and I play complementary roles, and then I'll let Rhonda further explicate sort of the special role that she plays. First of all, we're building bridges between, quote, here and there, or between, quote, them in spirit and us here in the physical. And we affectionately refer to them as the A-team, and we
the
A-team, in the physical
right.
as the B-team.
Right.
Okay, so they're the A-team, and we're the B-team. And we have the privilege, and I'm saying this as a Harvard-trained scientist who has to be very skeptical about all this and justify everything he says with evidence. So I have to be unusually cautious and conservative. So if I make a statement saying that there's a team of people that we're working with on the other side, I say this with great caution and with enough evidence to be able to justify that. Now,
sure.
So we have an A-team and then we have a B-team. Now, the A-team and the primary working with the A-team requires somebody with mediumship skills who is also devoted to science. And Rhonda is in that role. So she's sort of the coordinator and the interface between the A-team and the rest of the work. And then Rhonda, of course, works with other research and evidence-based mediums, such as, you know, I'm sure people that your audience have heard of, such as Suzanne Giesman or Suzanne Wilson and other individuals, to help validate and extend the work. Then there's the B side, and particularly the scientific side, the engineering side, the physiological side, and that's more of the role that I play. So, you know, I have the university appointments, and I have this laboratory, which we were then able to essentially transform over the years into a laboratory that's devoting a good 70 to 80% of its efforts in the area of documenting the existence of a greater reality and the role that spirit can play in our individual and collective lives.
Wow.
And Rhonda and I see the A-team and the B-team as sort of like overlapping circles. And the area that those two circles intersect are the places where Rhonda and I then play the bridge.
So let's then set the scene. We have, as you say, the A-team. I'm fond of telling people that the moving parties in this are people we used to think were dead, and their lab assistants are illustrious scientists like you who sort of
right.
follow their lead. Is that extreme to say that?
No. In fact, we are their assistants in no uncertain terms. Now, of course, I have difficulty in sort of saying these people overtly, again, because I'm an academic and I have to be very cautious. Rhonda, on the other hand, because she's not, you know, primarily an academic, she has the freedom to be able to be more overt. She's more like you, Roberta. You know,
uh-huh.
She can say what she really feels because she is in a position to do so. So if you want to talk a little bit about the A-team, I'm going to turn this over to Rhonda.
Well, okay. This is not an area of research that I sought out to look into. When my mother passed, she immediately started communicating with me. It was not something I expected, but it was something that I couldn't deny because her efforts and her communications were so overt and so clear that I had to acknowledge them. And, of course, being my mother, I embraced them as well.
Did you know you had any skills in this field before your mother died?
You know, I really didn't. I grew up in a spiritual household, so spirituality and prayer and communing with the divine was something that I'd practiced from early on. It was very natural for me. And yet, communicating with the dead, if you will, was not something I'd been taught about. It was not part of my practice or part of my thinking was something that was possible. And so when it began, it was totally surprising for me, and I couldn't believe that I had not been told about this. It was something that had totally escaped me, even though I'd been a seeker and had looked into very many things in the spiritual realm, in, you know, parapsychology and other areas of new science and a whole array of areas that had interested me, and this one had escaped me. So when it began happening, it was a total surprise, and it forced me onto a new path of a quest for answers, and it led me to Gary's book, The Afterlife Experiments, and a handful of others that were really important to me when I was trying to put together the pieces of what was happening.
So Gary got a twofer when he then met and married you, because I don't think he really, I think it was real love. I mean, I should just say parenthetically to my friends listening, I mean, I know these people personally. You never saw a more adorable couple than the two of them, and so I know this is not a marriage of convenience, but how serendipitous that it turned out to be one where the two of you can work together so smoothly. I think that's fabulous.
Right, and I had no idea that when I met Rhonda, and that, of course, she had developed the skill with her mother, that she would then end up developing skills in seeing other people that we used to think of were dead, as
yes.
you say, you know. And not only that, that the group of people who are now part of the formal part of what we call the Sacred Promise Team, which I'll let Rhonda introduce, are people that neither one of us could have ever guessed in a billion years, billions of years, we would ever have the privilege to come to know
right.
and work with.
I know. I think this is fabulous. And I should just say parenthetically that what I've learned in doing the research I've done is that they're very choosy about who they will work with. I mean, there have been people, this kind of research has been going on informally since the 70s at least. And there have been people with names everyone would recognize who have died and then have worked with living researchers, but it's never lasted for long. And I think it's a real tribute to you and to your work that they have the faith in you to put their sort of eggs in your basket, so to speak. They're betting that you're going to be the one who will be able to bring their dreams to fruition. And I think that's fabulous.
Well, we are committed to the process and to them, and we've been working with them for over 6 years now, almost 7 years, this particular team of spirits, and they are equally committed. That's why Gary calls them the Sacred Promise Team, because we've made a sacred promise to them, and we trust that they've made a sacred promise to us to give their all to this process and see how far we can take it, hopefully to the point of a breakthrough that we're hoping for, so that we will have technology that will give them a voice again and be able to speak for themselves.
So these people then, some of them are scientists, right? And,
mm-hmm.
and others are who are, can you tell us briefly who the people are that you're working with now? I know Gary can't say it because he's supposed to be the scientist guy, but I know he's confident about this too. And could you just sort of tell us who they are?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Rhonda has a new edition of her book coming out called Love Eternal New Edition. And
yeah.
in the two new chapters, she actually reveals for the first time who the some of the core team members are, including people who are quite controversial. And I think that this would be an absolutely fine time, if Rhonda wishes to just now going to be revealed in her book that's coming out, you know, around May 7th or 8th. She might as well, you know, share it. Because
yeah.
I then, in turn, mentioned these people in this very long afterword that I wrote, including some of the latest evidence that supports their participation.
So I think it's going to help people to want to read your book, really, to hear this. I'm excited. I can't wait to hear myself. Thank you, Rhonda.
Well, the team began forming, really, when I started attending a development circle here when I first moved to Tucson with Gary. And it was a group of mediums that were coming together to develop their skills. And Gary was observing the group to witness how it was that mediums were able to, you know, develop this skill to communicate with spirit. And after a couple years, they encouraged me to start participating more, and I was surprised when I began sensing some of the spirits that they were already in communication with, one of whom was Albert Einstein. And I started having not only experiences where I thought I was sensing Albert and hearing him, but I had a dream that had some very evidential information that was given to me in the dream. And the other spirits started coming shortly thereafter. I think Gary, you know, is a leader in the field, and if someone on the other side was interested in letting everyone know that they are still alive, who would they want to come to?
Right.
But someone who took them seriously, who entertained the
right.
possibility, and who was looking into it scientifically. And because I already knew the language of spirit because of having communicated with my mom already for 7 years, you know, I was another part of the puzzle that made it possible for them to see this as a, you know, a rich opportunity for them to be heard and to be taken seriously. So Albert Einstein was one of the first that joined our team. Over the next few years, the next 5 years or so, it developed into there being about 30 individuals, 30 spirits that came and joined the team.
Oh, my goodness.
It became,
really?
Yeah. So when it got up to the point of being 30, it was a little unwieldy trying to communicate with a room full of 30 people that have, you know, their own ideas and agendas and contributions and want to be heard. And so a couple of years ago, I actually created a core team that I would work with. You know, everyone else was still welcome, but I honed it down to six primary core team members just to make it doable so that we could concentrate on the science and developing the technology. And then after that happens, then everybody will be able to you know, take advantage of it. But Albert Einstein was one of the first. Most of the team members have come to us, but actually, Albert brought someone that he wanted to be a part of the team, and it's a long, interesting, funny story as to how he brought David Bohm to us. But David
Wow.
Bohm and Albert Einstein are two of the primary scientists that we work with, two of the team core members.
Wow.
Other scientists we work with are Nikola Tesla, Tom Edison, Max Planck. But David and Albert are the two core members. Two of the core team members.
Wow.
Two others.
So who is the sixth one then? Those, we have five.
Oh, no. Those were just some of the scientists. But the six core members, I will tell you, are Albert Einstein, David Bohm, my mother.
Oh, yes. That's right. I remember that.
Mm-hmm. Susie Smith. Gary, if you want to explain who Susie is, for those who don't know.
Yeah, for people who don't know, Susie Smith was a woman who wrote a total of 30 books in the field of parapsychology and life after death. In fact, and I met her after she was, quote, retired, living in Tucson. And Susie was an authority in the field, but she was a lay scientist. She created her own little foundation called the Survival Research Foundation to try to support research in this field. And as I affectionately say in multiple books, Susie became my adopted grandmother. She used to call me her illegitimate grandson. and as Susie was fond of saying, she couldn't wait to die so she could prove that she was still here.
Right.
And after Susie passed away, she became very actively involved attempting to communicate with me through many mediums. And Susie has continued to play a very active role in my life and in the work that we've been doing. In fact, I often affectionately say that Susie Smith gives new meaning to the phrase, our work is never done.
No, it really isn't.
So she's having, so they're sort of the two, if you would, lay people, but
yeah,
who were very sophisticated when they were here on the earth, deeply spiritual people. That is Rhonda's mother and mm-hmm. and Susie. And Rhonda writes about Susie in some depth in her book Love Eternal. So those are, that's four. Now I'll let Rhonda introduce the other two.
And the other two that round out the six core team members are Harry Houdini and Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson's a new one for me. I didn't know about him. But let's talk for a moment about this. So what you have in your six core people are two illustrious physicists,
mm-hmm.
two very spiritual lay people,
mm-hmm.
and then two people who frankly blow our mind to think about working with this. Let's talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
People tell me over and over, didn't Harry Houdini prove none of this was real? He was able to debunk it all. And I say, yes, and he feels very bad about that now because when he got there, he discovered he'd been debunking the truth. So he's been working on it ever since. And he's working with you now. I think that's fabulous.
Yeah, what I'll do is I'll tell you a little bit about how Harry came into our lives, because Harry came into the research actually even before Rhonda became involved with the work. It's just we had to keep all of the secret. And then the addition of a person that we've for years used as a pseudonym, we referred to him as Peter Taylor for a whole host of reasons. It's now finally no longer necessary for us to keep his identity secret, and that's Michael Jackson. And I'll let Rhonda explain how he became involved. He's even more controversial than Harry.
So yes, I can imagine that he is. Tell us about Harry then. How did he come to you?
Okay, well, Harry Houdini is really interesting because, first of all, I was very well aware of Harry, partly because I had deep interest in magic when I was younger. And then when I got involved with this research, I knew that he was, you know, the leading both skeptic and debunker of the fraudulent mediums of his day.
Right.
And he was exposing fraudulent mediums, and there were many fraudulent mediums.
Yes.
So he had good reason to be upset that the public was being duped, because there were a lot of non-spiritual, spiritually claimed entertainers who were doing, you know, very unethical things. However, Harry deeply wanted to believe in life after death because he dearly loved his mother, who then passed away. And he had a very interesting relationship with Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who wrote the Sherlock Holmes series. And as you know, Sherlock Holmes became deeply convinced that survival of consciousness was real. And the two of them became both friends and then also, you know, somewhat, I won't say in conflict, but they were certainly approaching this from different points of view. Now, what happened was that as I was doing this research, and then, of course, skeptics would always say, but Harry Houdini already disproved this. What happened was, again, multiple mediums. So this is the way it's always started for me. I mean, before I met Rhonda, multiple mediums came to me and said that they were in contact with Albert Einstein and that he had messages both for humanity and for me. And I said, that's ridiculous. I had enough trouble just acknowledging the fact that somebody's deceased grandmother, you know, like Susie Smith could be ill, or some deceased child, let alone a famous scientist. And in my book, The Sacred Promise, I introduced the book by confessing that mediums had been coming to me for years with these claims, and I couldn't take them seriously, i.e. I was not brave enough, to tell you the truth. Anyway, that also happened with Harry. And when multiple mediums who I was then working with, including mediums at the time who were associated in the laboratory, I then finally decided to see whether or not that was really true. And we ultimately, at that point, Rhonda was now in my life, and we actually scheduled a blinded reading with a medium to see whether or not Harry Houdini and also Sir Arthur Conan Doyle would show up. And I was doing this with a colleague of mine who is an authority on Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. In fact, he belongs to the esteemed association of Sherlock Holmes aficionados. And anyway, to make a long story short, that reading turned out to be extraordinarily evidential. And we ultimately published a pair of articles in the journal that's affiliated with the Academy for, now called the Academy for Consciousness and Spirituality Studies, on those sets of readings and what they meant. I then began working with, we would always refer to him as HHH, Hypothesized Harry Houdini.
I remember when you used to talk
remember
that,
and I would actually, and I actually have spent hundreds and hundreds of hours using the various stages of our technology with who we affectionately call Harry. And he has been one of the most devoted and motivated and responsible, quote, you know, departed hypothesized co-investigators of any of any of the members on the team. Now, of course, he was a very famous, world-known entertainer.
Yes.
And what's amusing is, and it's always, you know, it's sort of a challenge enough to be working with distinguished scientists, but to be working with distinguished entertainers who also cared about these deep issues. One of the things that all these people share in common, and I'll set the stage for Ron to talk about Michael Jackson, is that all of them deeply cared about, they were deeply spiritual. To various ways, they cared about the fate of humanity and the planet. And if anyone sort of expressed the created songs like "Heal the World," and was concerned about the health and evolution of, for example, children and also nature, it was Michael Jackson. So I'll pass the baton to Rhonda, so you can hear a little bit about how we were forced by the evidence to come to the conclusion that he had decided that he wanted to become involved as well.
Wow, yes.
And one of the things that I always find interesting, and we didn't find this out until about 2 years after we had been working with Michael Jackson. About 7 months before he passed, he had become aware of Gary's research and was interested in it. And he had requested that some radio interviews that Gary had done be sent to him, and Gary's book, The Afterlife Experience, were included with those interviews. So shortly before he passed, he had expressed an interest in Gary's work. So he was familiar with the topic, he was interested in the topic, and particularly in Gary's research. So the fact that he had that awareness and openness before he passed makes it a little understandable that after he passed, he would have that same attraction to Gary and the subject.
Well, it's also amusing, if I can intervene and Rhonda can then take over, but we didn't know this initially.
No.
And it wasn't until Rhonda was cleaning off old messages on our backup AT&T answering machine that she discovered a message by a physician, who will keep nameless, who was a close associate of Michael's. And that physician called me, left a message on the phone, and I didn't hear it, with the indication that she knew him personally and he was deeply interested in the work and that he wanted to be in contact with me and so on. And of course, and I never received that message.
Yeah.
We still have that message. You know, so someday we can show proof that there was clearly some sort of a connection with him before he passed.
So he may well have, because we often know ahead of time, I mean, our higher consciousness knows when they're going to take an exit point. And so this may have been part of his sort of internal work within his own spirit that was preparing him. So I think that's fascinating.
But even more fascinating, it was how Rhonda discovered that he was attempting to make contact. Do you want to share a little of that?
Yes, tell
Rhonda?
Us.
Well, interestingly, even before that, a couple months after he'd passed, there was Paul Davids, who some of your listeners may know. He did a documentary called The Life After Death Project, and he's written a book recently with Gary called An Atheist in Heaven. And he was here in Tucson, and he was having a reading by a local medium, and he was trying to connect with the person that was a good friend of his who'd passed, who was communicating with him, he felt. And his name is Forrest J. Ackerman. And during this reading, the medium said that Michael Jackson is here. Well, he'd only passed a couple months earlier, and it was kind of, I just felt a little uncomfortable. It was like, what does this have to do with Forrest J. Ackerman? They had no connection.
Right.
Is she just reaching? And I had not started communicating with spirit at this point, so it was kind of, you know, unusual to me, and it just seemed like out of place. Well, then about 4 or 5 months later, we started having our own connection, and so it made sense that he was aware ahead of time. And also, come to find out, Forrest J. Ackerman was actually in the Thriller music video.
Oh, really?
He was sitting in the row right behind Michael in the Thriller video. He's kind of the king of sci-fi. He coined the term sci-fi. He had a Famous Monsters magazine. He was a very influential person in the sci-fi field, and so that's why he was in the Thriller video. But he did have a strong Michael connection, so it made sense that he would come through in the reading, but nobody made the connection at that point. So anyway, a few months later, the movie, the documentary, This Is It, came out, which features the rehearsals leading up to what were to be Michael's concerts in London. And Gary and I had gone to see that film once or twice, and we really were enjoying it, and it was beautifully done. And the second or third time we went, we'd already gotten our seats in the theater, I'd gone out to get some refreshments, and when I was going to go back into the theater, there was a light blinking over the door. Now, I'd been in communication with my mom for well over 8 years by then, and so I knew the language of spirit. I knew they often communicated with lights and all sorts of electronics,
yeah.
And you know, you imagine the way of communicating, and then they find a way to use it. The degree of creativity was amazing to me, but I recognized it. So when I saw the blinking light, my natural reaction was just to say, "Hi, Michael." And I didn't necessarily think it was Michael Jackson doing it. It was a flashing light. But when I see a flashing light, sometimes my heart just opens up because I know it can often be communication with spirit. So with a great deal of, you know, compassion and empathy and genuineness, I just said, "Hello, Michael," you know, not knowing if it was him, not knowing if he'd hear it. But it was a genuine, heartfelt, you know, communication and well-wishing. And it seemed like that just kind of opened the floodgates. It's like, I acknowledged him, he noticed I acknowledged him, and all of a sudden we just started having all sorts of communications, whether it be through lights, television, synchronicities. It went on and on and on, and it just developed a relationship with Gary and I, with Michael, that continues to this day and has just been growing and growing.
Volumes of evidence. In fact, in some respects, Rhonda has accumulated more evidence across multiple domains of categories of evidence, including independent mediums verifying and not knowing that Michael Jackson was associated with Rhonda and the work, and them independently coming up with and detecting Michael and so on, through Rhonda getting scores of evidence of things that about Michael that she didn't know and or what's happening right at the moment, which would then be independently confirmed through synchronicities on a scale that is as striking as anything that I confess in my new book that's coming out called Synchronicity in the One Mind. But I'd like to insert something, because I believe that this is part of the reason that a controversial singer like Michael also connected with Rhonda and myself. And that is, I was a musician. I was a professional musician. I played guitar professionally, meaning I got paid for it in multiple bands for a 10-year period in high school and college. And I particularly played sort of soul, Motown, funk, rock and roll, and jazz. Now, so I have an affinity and love for music. Now, Michael came along just after my professional quote career ended. I'm now in graduate school, you know, at Harvard, and I don't have time for music or anything like this. And so I didn't really know any of the Jacksons' work, and frankly, I wasn't even quote a fan. I knew next to nothing about him except for some of the you know, the controversial things, the tabloids would be reporting.
Right.
So I knew next to nothing about him. I certainly didn't know that he had a spiritual side. And because I didn't know his music, I didn't know songs like Man in the Mirror. I didn't know songs like Earth Song or Heal the World. I didn't know any of that side to him. And so when he died, I mean, the truth is, a lot of people all over the world, millions of people, were deeply touched by his death. And
right.
I didn't even bother paying attention to the, you know, the major events that occurred, including the singers and so on, honoring him. But when This Is It came out, and when Rhonda wanted to see this, and I said, sure, let's go. And then I saw one particular song called Earth Song toward the end of the documentary, which was the take-home message of this This Is It concert tour. Because This Is It meant, if we don't act now, it's going to be too late. And it was
yes.
This Is It, not just for him and his career, but it was This Is It for humanity
for
and the planet.
Yeah.
When I saw that song, and I saw him singing it, and I heard him talking both before and after the song, I became a deep admirer of his love for the planet.
Yeah.
And you understand that?
And the people.
And that
yeah.
became, for me, the number one motivation, because that was then ultimately followed by one song later by Man in the Mirror, which I had also never heard, which said it's essentially us, up to us. We have to change ourselves before we can change the world. Now,
right.
I became so devoted to that that I think that part of the reason that Michael then took the step to connect with Rhonda, because she also deeply cares about music and so on, but she's also an artist and she was involved in fashion. So between the two of us, we covered a lot of his, and Rhonda was involved with dance, and so you put all that together. If he was going to pick any, you know, group of people to try to continue his life's work,
yes,
we're the ideal.
Yes,
we're
that's
the ideal
a fabulous
team.
Story.
And I should say
absolutely
one other thing.
Right.
We're essentially going public with this, Roberta, on your radio show.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Then I want to just say one thing, and that is, Rhonda and I, we watched This Is It many times, and every time that we got to the, you know, and so if you get past all of his talent and all of his singing and all of his dancing and all of his and all the love that people have for that, but you get toward the end of toward the message of everything that he was doing, and that's what both of us were resonating with, Rhonda and I. What was truly sad to me was in all of the rave reviews for the documentary This Is It, not one of them was brave enough to address the deep messages of why he was having that concert.
Wow.
They were just so enamored by Michael and his singing and his dancing and what a nice person he was, and none of them were willing to address that important message.
And it was so important to him.
It was critically
yes.
important to Michael.
Yes.
And it's also, frankly, what motivates me more than anything. So what I did...
I think a lot of us here feel the same way.
Of course. But
that's
we don't
the point
say it
of
overtly.
All the work we've been doing.
Exactly.
I'm coming to understand this now. I mean, I'm hearing you. I'm saying, isn't it amazing? Everyone's coming together.
Everybody's coming together.
Trying to save the world. Yeah.
Exactly. And so that was for me. That became. Then I considered it as much a privilege to be able to spend quality time, you know, indirectly through people like Rhonda. You have to remember,
yes.
and your audience probably knows this by now, but, you know, I don't see spirit and I don't hear spirit. And one of my colleagues referred to me as the Helen Keller of afterlife research. Okay? You know? I don't see any of this stuff. So I have to totally depend on the evidence-based mediums, you know,
yes.
the Rhondas and the Suzannes and the Susans and so on and so forth of the world,
yes.
in order to be able to, until the technology comes along, you know, I'm dependent on their eyes and ears, their psychic eyes and ears.
That and synchronicity. You don't just take our word for it. You also have synchronicity.
No, I don't take your word for it at all.
We are having too much fun. Dear friends, we're having too much fun. We've got to get serious because we're soon going to be through with our hour. Let's pause for 1 second. I just want to say, this is Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes, and I'll talk about my books later. But right now, I'd like to have you tell us what you're doing in your laboratory with these illustrious associates who are really the ones conducting the experiments. What's going on?
May I share a little bit of the technology, Rhonda?
Of course.
Okay.
I'm
the technology guy. That's one of my jobs. We have been developing various forms of technology to detect the, quote, energy of spirit, with the ultimate goal and the very defined goal of creating a technology that is so reliable that it can serve as what we call a, quote, soul phone. And as you know, the contemporary smartphones do multiple things. They have texting, which is the simplest of communication, all the way to things like FaceTime or Skype, where you have both voice and video. Now, the advantage of texting is that texting is really a binary process, because what you're doing is you're pushing a single key, right, or a single letter on the screen. It's an electric key, you know, electrostatic key, and you've got 26 binary switches, one for each of the letters, for example. So the question is, could we create a switch, we call it a spirit switch or a soul switch, that would be not statistically reliable, but was empirically, practically reliable? Because I have, you know, published multiple studies, as some of your audience know, documenting that you can detect the presence of spirit and get statistically significant results using a variety of technologies. But they work maybe 70% of the time. Now, 70% of the time is phenomenal from a research point of view.
Yes.
But not from a practical technology point of view.
Yes.
I mean, if our cell phones were only 70% accurate when you typed letters, that's not a very good communication.
No.
People would use it.
Yeah, it would break up a lot of relationships, in fact. What did you say to me? Yes, that would not be good.
No, it would not be good. So we're trying to do not just the research side, but the technology development side. And again, as you know, I use the metaphor of the Wright brothers moment. The plane is now taken off, but the question is, can we convert it to something that's commercially viable?
Right.
So we are doing multiple forms of technology using state-of-the-art optical sciences and also now audio sciences. So I'll give you an example of one of the areas of research which is just literally, quote, happening right at the very moment. We have developed a system which actually occurred to me many years ago, but I only finally raised the funding for doing this specific work. It was about a year ago for this particular research, and that was to see whether I could develop a technology based on what they have been teaching us through Rhonda and other mediums, where we could literally detect the voice of spirit, the sound of spirit.
Wow, does spirit make sounds?
Spirit can, under certain circumstances, both anecdotally in terms of what people have reported,
yes,
and also for theoretical reasons, they should, in principle, and be able to, quote, make sounds. Now, they will only they don't have to do that when they're on the other side. Okay, they don't have to, quote, use sound and move air. But that doesn't mean that they've lost the ability to do that if necessary. Okay? So the question was, could we, if we developed a super sensitive microphone and sound collecting system and combined it with certain computer and statistical procedures for detecting essentially the, if you would, subliminal sounds. These are sounds that are far below the level that our ear can hear, but a supersensitive microphone with appropriate averaging and statistics could pick up. Could we develop a protocol where we could actually document that motivated spirits following the protocol with this equipment, that we could document the presence of recordable audio signal? That was the goal.
Wow. Okay.
And
how's it going?
Well, that's a lot. So I'll get to this. It took about 6 months.
I'm excited about this.
To develop the, to get all of the software working to do this. And it finally, the software was finally operational just between the Christmas, New Year's period. And we were also at that point moving a laboratory back to the main part of the university. And so we only had a brief window of time before we had to tear down the equipment and then reset it up at the university. And so literally we completed these experiments, if you can believe this, on New Year's Day. Because it occurred over essentially a week's period of time. But the New Year's Day part was sort of the seminal moment. And much to my amazement and delight, we have the first evidence of being able to show that a collaborating spirit, motivated, working with Rhonda, could actually produce measurable sound properties, okay, that we could document. Now, in order to do this kind of research, alter properly, you need to have more control over the environment. And in particular, what you need is a research quality, professional quality, what's called sound isolation chamber. Like a sound studio, but super sound controlled. And then, thanks to a very special gentleman who heard about this work, he agreed to give us the funding to have a specially designed one built for our laboratory. So this sound isolation chamber has been designed. It also has what's called a Faraday cage shielding within it, so it's electrically shielded. It will be electrically shielded, but its primary purpose is to be a sound isolation booth at a very high quality. And that facility is going to be probably delivered to our lab in the next couple of weeks.
Wow.
And so finally, we'll be able to collect the most controlled data ever testing this hypothesis. And, of course, I can't promise that when we do all of this, that it will ultimately translate into a practical device as opposed to, again, a statistically significant device. But the only way you know is by trying and testing.
This is fabulous.
And guess
wow.
who? The first person who was the being that was given the opportunity to see whether voice could be detected. Guess who that opportunity
who?
Was given to?
Who? Michael?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, isn't that fabulous?
So he's back at the microphone, in a sense.
Yeah, he's back at the microphone.
So does he sound like himself?
The way that it works is that you can't actually hear the voice. This now gets into levels of technical complexity, not complication. In order to optimize the detecting of the signal, we have to what's called rectify the signal, which means take things that are going in both directions and put them both in one direction. And then what we do is we have to sum the energy of that signal so that we maximize detecting the energy of the signal. So we end up converting it into what's called a measurement of dB, decibels.
Oh, okay.
And so you lose the frequency because what you're doing is summing the power.
Wow.
So what we have is the evidence of synchronized expressions of summated audio signal that we know is audio. But you can't hear the audio.
Okay. Oh, well, that's fine. I get it.
But if once you have all the right conditions made, in principle, since that summation is based on the summation of the frequencies, it's just a more sophisticated set of equipment that will then allow us to tease apart the frequencies.
Wow.
So you have to
this
do it, quote,
so
in steps.
This is so exciting.
You understand that.
Yes. This
and
is
our
so
goal
exciting.
Is something that's going to be 100% reliable, like a cell phone, unlike EVPs, which are not reliable.
Right.
Right.
And, in principle, if we create the right, what we call soul studio, within the case of auditory equipment, truly motivated spirits, such as the Michael Jacksons, of the world, they should ultimately be able to have real speech be expressed.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's the theory, and that's the goal.
The texting can work, right? I know that you were doing that with photons of light.
Yes.
And so now you're doing...
Well, I just gave you an example. We're doing other things, too. I mean, I'll give you one more example. This is, again, another project that had occurred to me many years ago, but was very expensive to implement, and I never had the funding for it. And then, thanks to a group of people... At the end of this past year, I mean the beginning of January, they funded the capability for us using a state-of-the-art and specially designed what's called the dynamical interferometer. And don't worry about what that means.
No. It's a great word, though.
It's a nice word. but this kind of equipment is so sensitive that it is affected by what I call microbreezes. Any tiny little shift in air current causes a, quote, artifact, because the equipment is so sensitive. And you don't want, they're not interested in measuring the air, they're interested in measuring all kinds of other things. So they work out these procedures to get rid of the air. Well, one person's noise is another person's signal. And I had, you know, as you've heard, very often people will experience, for example, that when spirit is present, they'll feel some sort of coolness or a cool breeze in the presence. Not everyone, obviously, but it's a very
common
kind of experience.
It's often reported, though. You're absolutely right. Exactly right.
And one of the implications that I drew from a theoretical point of view, which has been then confirmed by people like David Bohm and Albert Einstein and so on, and they expanded upon it much more than I could have initially conceived it, is that in principle, when they, quote, densify, when they appear in what's seeable, for example, in a prior physical form, they are very subtly affecting the air around them.
Of course.
And so the question was, if you could design the appropriate apparatus to measure those subtle changes, appropriately controlled, we should theoretically be able to detect that. And that may be 100% reliable. We don't know, but we'll see.
Wow.
So anyway, to make a long story short, thanks to this brilliant optical scientist, PhD student, whose pseudonym is, his name is David, after David Bohm, we gave him a nickname, Ron didn't have him. We have now ordered all this equipment, and we have an optical sciences table in the laboratory, and he just finished assembling the first version of it literally last week, and it's now going through its initial testing phase. But what we hope is that within the next month or so, we will be doing formal experiments with Harry and with Michael and with many to see whether we can detect the presence of, for example, hand movements.
Wow. Well, we're going to, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time, but this is a wonderful lead-in to the next time that we have a conversation, because it sounds like you'll have some very exciting things potentially to report then. And I'm all ears. I'm so excited about what you're doing. Unfortunately, though, I've got to stop now and just say this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. I say this over and over. I hope you'll come to really believe it. You're a powerful, eternal being. You never began. You never will end. And when you really get what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. You all know that my books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, to which Gary wrote a foreword about Susie Smith, and soon we'll have The Fun of Growing Forever. All my books are available through, of course, a lot of bookstores and Amazon, and you can read about them and find my blog and contact me through my website, robertagrimes.com. Our guest next week is going to be another researcher leading the work in electronic communication for real. And again, it's being led by people that we used to think were dead. And he'll be my beautiful friend, Dr. R. Craig Hogan. He's spearheading work on what's called the North American Station, a different project. This is what's exciting. There are dead teams working with the very, very most illustrious people now, determined to break news like you would not believe. And I think it's going to happen within the next year or two. It's very exciting. This week, of course, we've been talking with the incomparable scientist and scholar and my wonderful friend, Dr. Gary Schwartz of the University of Arizona at Tucson. and his lovely co-researcher, and she really actually is lovely, Rhonda Schwartz. Gary has a keen and questing mind. When you know this man and you spend time with him, it's amazing to watch his mind work. I mean, really, Gary, you're almost like a child forever in your curiosity and in the things you think about. I just love being near you.
Thank you, but I think, for the record, you know, I have a spouse that is equally childlike and nurtures it in me, and then particularly both colleagues on the B side, but more musically on the A side.
Yes.
You've got people who are light at heart, even, quote, there, as opposed to just, quote, here. So it's easy to sustain this playful creativity. Because I'm surrounded by people.
I think that's a wonderful point. I want to make sure people hear that. We find that people who are there, who are dead, even if they were fancy scientists in life, become light and joyous. I mean,
Absolutely.
How could you not be? We have that to look forward to, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think also that anyone who is going to spend time with me or with Rhonda, that's just the price that they have to pay. They have to deal with silliness. And so it's
a lot of laughing, sort of a self-selecting
or like attracts like kind of thing.
That's true. There's a serious amount of laughing. Dear friends, we think of life on Earth as the most important place, but it actually, this is just, you know, preschool or something. The real firepower is in what we still think of as the afterlife levels. And when it comes to electronic communication, which is the next big thing, it's the dead researchers who are the main experimenters, and people like Gary and Rhonda are delighted to be their lab assistants. Even knowing who the lights are, though, who are working with them, I have to say, I know this time it's going to work. We've been disappointed in the past, those of us who have studied this. Over decades, we've found it coming to nothing. It's exciting to see that the big guys and females are all working in this field now, and this time it really is going to work. For now, though, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.